By 15. You're tuned to Free Radio, as mentioned before, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, twice weekly broadsides at profiteers, politicians, and other poltroons who are either deceiving the community, ripping it off of rights, or not acting fast enough to secure those rights based upon their responsibilities from the electorate. And that's one of my jobs here. I've raised a lot of homeless civil rights issues. I'm also concerned about the Iraqi war and what locally we can do about it, what the city council is or isn't contributing to stopping that criminal enterprise, as well as the criminal enterprise of our own police in devastating the rights of poor and homeless people who have no legal place to sleep at night and who are nonetheless harassed, ticketed, cited, and given $95, essentially extorted of money, put in jail if they don't provide it, or otherwise have their credit ruined by having their tickets sent down south for civil collection. You can be a part of the show if you have reports of your own or concerns of your own. You can call into the show, and the phone number is not too hard to remember. It's 427-FRSC, 427-3772. Free Radio Santa Cruz, or Freak Radio Santa Cruz, is the name of this unlicensed, unapologetic station you're listening to. We don't have an FCC stamp of approval. In fact, we give them the boot of disapproval. That's where we're at with this particular situation. But we do want to broadcast voices from the community. So if you are interested in commenting on something you've heard or in raising issues you think are related to what we're talking about, or if you have an emergency situation you want to discuss involving the Santa Cruz community, please feel free to bring it up here on Free Radio. So there. Again, the number is 427-3772. In the studio with us, each with his own mic, we have Brian Holtz. Holtzy? Come a little closer to the mic, Brian. You have to be literally about an inch away. It has to be tuned directly in front of you. And actually, I have to turn it on, too. That's another detail. So, welcome, Brian.
Welcome. Yeah, thanks.
And also we have Ike Solem. Ike, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I know that I saw both of you in the last couple of days. Ike, I ran into you at the city council meeting every other Tuesday, except, of course, for August. City council gets together to ratify whatever its staff has decided it wants it to do. And I guess it did some of that. It has been doing some of that around issues you're concerned about. I know you're concerned about, you raised the issue at oral communication of city council involvement in a large contract to a firm, Camp Dresser and McKee,
and that's the desalination proposal for the city of Santa Cruz.
Costing several million, right?
Well, the pilot project costs several million. If the full plant is anywhere from maybe closer to $100 million.
Okay. Now, normally I'm not into the salty or unsalty approach, although it's a matter, I'm sure, that's of importance to this community. But you have raised the issue in terms of the significance of the city council's choosing a firm that has significant war profiteering investments in Afghanistan, has been involved in corrupt enterprises in this country, and also doesn't seem to be a local company, even though it's billed as such by none other than, if I have you correctly, Mike Rotkin?
Well, the entire city council, they first tried to say it was a Walnut Creek-based engineering firm that they'd given the contract to, and it's not. It's a global engineering firm. It's given hundreds of thousands of dollars to Republican-connected lobbying firms in Washington. They're involved in the Katrina rebuilding contracts. And I think what's interesting about it from a local perspective is that here's a company that acts internationally on the state level and at the local city level. And, you know, when you look here in a city like Santa Cruz, which is purports to be, you know, the center of liberal politics in the United States,
yes.
And you find that they're in bed with this global international corporation, it really makes you wonder what's going on with our political system.
Or perhaps it gives you the answer to what's going on with our local political system. Brian, you were on Becky Johnson's Club Cruise show last night criticizing the Capitola Police Department and presumably also the Santa Cruz Police Department for ticketing you, when in fact they were rightfully telling you that your appropriate responsibility is to stay awake starting at 11 o'clock at night, going until 8:30 in the morning, and then to go to sleep. Now, what's the matter with that kind of schedule?
Well, first of all, a man should have a roof over his head, right, in this country.
Yeah. Well, if you can pay for it, hombre, where's your
buck? We broke away from England because the laws weren't right, and it caused an uproar. And the same thing happens in this city, but in every city in the United States, is that if it would all gather together, it would cause an uproar. But
yeah, but are you saying that Santa Cruz citizenry should provide you with a roof?
No, they should provide you with, if you don't have a roof, then you should not be arrested for not having a roof.
I think that's always been my position, yeah. And I have some sensitivity to the need for roofs as well. But given that there aren't any roofs for a lot of people, there shouldn't be, wake-up calls, tickets, harassment, second-class treatment.
Well, me, I purposely dress down even more than what my intelligence is because I don't want them to classify me anything. I'd rather have them classify me as a dummy and a homeless bum because I have a job and I want people to recognize me in my, you know, running around here.
So wait a minute, you actually dress more homeless looking than...
I dress with a poncho and my tambourine.
But doesn't this make you more of a target if you do that?
Yes, but it's like I'm trying to stand out because I want them, once they all know me, then they'll all know me and they will leave me alone.
And then in your secret identity, you will go to work. You actually have a job as well?
Yeah, I have a job, but...
Are you going to reveal for us the job or is that a secret?
If you want, it's right next to East Bay University.
Which is, so what
it's
kind of...
It's going to be a deli, but right now it's just a market.
What kind of work do you do?
Well, right now I'm learning all the products in the store, but I'm going to be the deli chef. I'm going to start the whole deli.
So you're a chef?
Yeah.
And at the same time, you have no place to sleep, so how many days a week do you work?
Well, I do tutoring, too, so it depends.
You do a variety of jobs.
Yeah.
Well, do your bosses know you're homeless or not?
Oh, out here, yeah. Oh, my friend owns a lot of these hotels. a bunch of them.
Oh, I see you've got some rich pals,
yeah,
eh?
Yeah, very
rich. Is there connected with...
But I won't accept a hotel room. It's like, why come out here and it's a $90 room? Why?
They aren't connected with
friends?
Camp Dresser and McKee, are they?
The
corporate
and,
firm.
He's my boss's
are they engineers?
Anyway, but
are
my boss said he
would use a lot of salt on the table. Go ahead, Ike. You want to say something?
No, we're not really. It's not so much that they are contracting city services out. Oh, that's a problem for the city workers. You know, we would rather see, you know, city money go to city employees and not be vacuumed out of the community. I mean, you're giving this money to a Cambridge, Massachusetts-based firm. Why not, at least if you're going to do this, at least hire a local firm that might go spend their money at, you know, a local business? Why not, you know, it's sort of like, it's along the lines of bringing these huge box stores like Walmart into the community. And just from a basic economic perspective, you know, spend the city money locally. And then even then, if you're really, why not focus on water conservation and maybe provide, you know, a few more services for the homeless, you know, retirement benefits for city workers. You know, why are tax dollars that are collected from a very wide variety of people funneled into just a few hands? And why is the city council so actively doing that?
Well, you certainly raised some of those questions at city council night before last during oral communications when you got to speak, but I did not, I would like to point out. Interestingly enough, at that city council meeting, every single person got to speak except for the last speaker, who was me, because I was put at the end of the line. Do I regard this as discrimination? No. Oh, come on. I mean, it's just a coincidence that kind of thing happens. And it's just a coincidence that Emily Riley said, our mayor said, well, you know, we're 10 minutes over time, so therefore you don't get to speak. I'm still pondering that one, but not pondering it too hard. But I'm glad you did get a chance to speak, Ike, because that gave me an opportunity to speak to you afterward and to make this opportunity to connect with you and hopefully get this kind of information out to the community, which you've already posted, by the way, for those who want a more elaborate and perhaps less choppy approach, because I'm going to be chopping back and forth between these topics and any other topics that come up when you call in at 427-3772. You can go to indybay.org, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, all small letters, all one word, indybay.org/Santa Cruz. And if you Google for Ike Solem, S-O-E-L-M, you'll find his article, Desalination and War Profiteering in the City of Santa Cruz. And I was looking it over earlier this afternoon, and it begins, as you were saying, Ike, the City of Santa Cruz entered into an arrangement with a global engineering firm, Camp Dresser and McKee, to build a trial desalination plant on the west side of Santa Cruz. And this was a year ago you wrote this. It's a global engineering firm, as you just mentioned, with contracts in Iraq and Afghanistan, which we haven't yet got into, which has an unsavory history of bribing public officials. That, of course, would never happen here in Santa Cruz. Desalination has a very poor economic and environmental track record, but the city has nevertheless signed a multi-million-dollar contract with this firm. And you continue, anyone who lived in California for any length of time realizes, and you go into the water supply and the history, the issue of desalination, which is a complicated issue, and you go into some of the history of Camp Dresser and McKee's projects in Tampa Bay, and their, or was it, I don't know if that was their plant or somebody else's desalination plant.
Well, that's a general problem with the desalination. That was a separate company, but there was a situation where the city entered into a contract with a private firm to build a desalination plant. It turned out not to work so well, and the city ended up owing tens of millions of dollars on a defunct plant that didn't even work.
You know, I know that this question came up about a year ago, not as a major issue for some of us at HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the fighting but mighty tiny civil rights group that meets weekly at the courthouse, for those of you who are interested, 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning, right between the county building and the court building next to the coffee cart. You're going to find these little commercials popping up throughout the hour, so get ready for it, the 2 hours, actually. The issue came up at a meeting a year ago because my next question to you is, well, you had these concerns about issues, you know, an issue that I'm not terribly well educated on, though perhaps I know a little more than I did before because of your writing. But that was an issue that I guess Mike Rotkin, a council member, a former mayor, probably the oldest, most multiply elected member of the council, repeatedly elected. I would call him repeatedly recycled, but, you know, he does get elected. I mean, that's what he points out. He says, I've been elected, and therefore I have a right to have my viewpoint essentially dominate over those of other people, and I get to cut you off and arrest you if you speak too long and so forth. change the rules so you can't speak on some topics and so forth, which is what he's done, and even block your way at ACLU meetings if you happen to show up, and he doesn't like the sign you're carrying, which is kind of anomalous and peculiar for an ACLU meeting, but not if Mike Rodkin is on the board of directors, apparently, because they tend to defer to authority. Although I have to say, Mike deferred to the police department that said, no, Mike, you can't arrest this guy, even if you don't like him, for carrying a sign into a public ACLU meeting. That is not going to kind of fly with us. At least that's what I didn't hear the conversation he had with the police, but I suspect that is the nature of what happened, because he told me he was going to have me arrested and decided against it. He later explained to me the reason he wasn't going to do it was because the police were there and they could control the situation. We're talking about 100 ACLU members versus five or six activists, three of them over the age of 55. We're still vigorous, mind you, but still, you know, we aren't as young as we used to be. So the issue to me a year ago when I talked to you, I don't think I talked to you on the phone. I think we scheduled actually a free radio meeting, which you ducked out on, you cheeseball.
Well, that was unavoidable.
But you're here now.
I'm here now, a year later.
And, you know, actually, that's kind of what I want to cover, because a year ago you were raising these issues. Certainly you tried to talk to Councilmember Rodkin about these issues, about the local issue, about the war profiteering issue, about the history of bribery, about a large corporation, money going out of the city. About the whole process of how this particular kind of project, which wasn't, you say, so successful in Florida, all these issues were raised, and he no doubt had a long discussion with you and gave you some rather persuasive arguments, right?
Well, how this all came about was, you know, I have a master's degree in ocean sciences from the University of California, Santa Cruz, and I looked into this desalination issue well over a year ago, and I just said, okay, well, what are they doing? And I said, Camp Dresser McKee, because they've contracted with this local engineering firm in Walnut Creek, Camp Dresser McKee. I looked them up on the internet, and I find, lo and behold, that they are actually a global engineering firm. I do a little more research, and I find that they are one of the firms that's getting some of these lucrative contracts, in at least in Afghanistan. Now, just recently, they received a $43 million contract to fix Afghanistan's water systems. And if you've been following the reports about Afghanistan, you know, they are not going to be doing contracting work in Afghanistan. It's a war zone. They can't even leave I think the only place the U.S. has much sway is in the central, is in Kabul, and there's bombings daily still in Afghanistan. It's not in the news as much as Iraq.
Now, have you actually, let's be fair to Camp Dresser and McKee, have you actually researched where they're trying to do the building, whether they are, in fact, engaging in the construction?
Okay, they just started the construction this summer on the pilot plant out on the on the west side of Santa Cruz at UC's Long Marine.
But I'm talking about Afghanistan, because we were talking about that topic. In other words, do we know that you, I mean, I would I would have the same questions. Can they really build in Afghanistan with all the turmoil? But, of course, our president, who went on the air recently, told us it all is going better overseas. Just smile and be happy and look forward. Got a long, hard slog ahead, and we can do it. We can surge, and we can also withdraw troops, a few, in the meantime.
Well, here's one of the things that got to me. Recently, I was lucky enough to see the Iraqi oil and electricity union heads came to Santa Cruz and gave a talk at the Vets Hall.
Okay.
And they sort of spelled out what was going on with the contracting situation.
In Iraq. Right. Where does McKee Dresser, what is it called? Dresser, give me the group again.
Camp Dresser McKee.
Camp Dresser and McKee. Do they have projects in Iraq now?
Well, they're kind of secretive about whether or not, the way the contracts work is you can subcontract. And so they are, according to the reports from the Center for Public Integrity, they did get a contract to do some of the water reconstruction in Iraq. Now, the main contractor in Iraq for the water construction is Bechtel. Bechtel will often subcontract out its contracts to other contractors.
But isn't water, contract, I mean, that's different than, let's say, supplying arms to militias or, you know, napalming and IED-ing people, improvised explosive devices. It's different than, you know, building prisons and Bagram and, you know, funding psychological consultants to torture in Guantanamo and things like that.
Well, that would be true if they were actually doing any of the work. And what the Iraq Oil and Electricity Union people said is that they have done nothing. They said, you'll get a contract to rebuild a school, Someone shows up and throws paint on the wall and leaves, and for that they'll get hundreds of thousands of dollars from the U.S. government.
Well, this is a general statement made by these people, but did you actually get them to address particularly this company, per se?
Well, now, this is where it gets interesting. I asked for the contact person for Camp Dresser McKee from the Water Department, and I said, well, who are you working with over there?
The City Water Department.
The City Water Department. Right. Said, can I get the name of your contact person at Camp Dresser McKee? And they refused to give me any information about who to contact.
Did you make a Public Records Act request?
Now, this is what I'm just starting to learn how to do.
There you go. That can help, although I'm finding it can be a slog.
Well, Bill Kotcher told me that many of those records may have been destroyed.
Or lost, perhaps, or, you know, shredded just along the way, you know, for more space. Rotkin has said we need, for example, to have less minutes at City Council in order to help the staff spend less time on these unnecessary tasks.
Well, this is what's so surprising. You know, you look and you hear about Karl Rove destroying 5 million White House emails, and you wonder, okay, are City Council members, are they Democrats or are they Republicans, or does it even matter?
It doesn't make any difference. I'm afraid they are in power, and that's what they care about, I think. They're running for higher office, not Rotkin, but Riley, Coonerty, you know, people like John Laird, who we thought was a liberal, and indeed on gay and gender issues seems to be a liberal guy. But you look at his votes on the Iran disinvestment proposal, which came up to the state legislature. He jumped right in line with Bush's, that Iran is a bunch of terrorists, and we're going to not and put any money in there until they're not terrorists, and we say they're not. We may have a terrorist calling in on the phone, or possibly somebody from Camp Dresser and McKee giving a response. Hi, you're on Free Radio with some critics and some supporters. Go ahead.
Well, what he should do is...
Madison, welcome to Free Radio.
...get the request. They don't know who their major contractor is for the biggest building in town they're working on. Give me a break.
Now, wait a minute. The biggest building they're working on? What are you talking about?
Well, come on. How big is South Tannery? $6 million project.
So there's another building.
I mean,
you're roaming again, but good. Let's stay with it. Go ahead.
They should have it on the tip of their tongue.
So you say that you've tried to get information about the largest construction project they're doing and you aren't able to get it from the city's bureaucracy? Is that right?
Well, I've tried to talk to one guy on the radio, and I asked him, well, why don't we have a program for cisterns? And he was just your typical Republican mouthpiece.
I'm sorry, a program for what?
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. A program for what? I didn't catch that. You
it
asked
was your
him.
Typical mouthpiece. It was a radio station in Monterey.
Right.
They had the mouthpiece.
Okay, my question to you, caller, and I want to kind of strike to the point here, is have you had problems getting information about the projects that are being built around the city the way Ike Solem here has had?
Yeah, I got blown off. He was the mouthpiece of saying, oh, yeah, there was somebody in the 80s, blah, blah, we should have done it, da, da. Expensive. A cistern, buddy, you go down there and you order it, it's $300 to throw it out back. I mean, there's nothing to it.
So again, you're not being very specific. What project were you looking for information on, and when were you turned down? How did that work?
This was about 9 months ago, because we have a property at Sea Ranch, and the same company has tried to buy out the Little Water District. They have bought them out up and down the coast because they want to control the water like oil. And they wanted the water bills are going to go up to $200. This guy around the corner.
Right. And what information did you try to find out that you weren't able to get?
What the history was that led up to having this stupid idea for the water plant and the desal plant.
Okay.
We don't need it.
Thank you. I'm going to cut you off for the moment because I want to go into that topic a little bit. But feel free to call back again, caller. The issue, for example, of what the history of these projects are, what the origin is, how the public process or the private process develops, I think it's a very important one. So, for instance, I recently attempted to get from Parks and Rec a history of why half the benches mandated for being present on Pacific Avenue after the earthquake are now gone. And Steve Hammack, who's the superintendent of Parks and Rec, informed me that there was no paper trail. They had no idea. There was no documentation for it. But, you know, he did provide me with a list of all the benches that they were supposed to have, they had originally had, and then all the ones that we now have. And there was a considerable difference. Similarly, when I asked with respect to RVs being banned in 4 parking lots on Lighthouse Field, A, B, C, and D, what was the process by which this was determined? Who was consulted? What kind of, you know, paper trail came out of this? Steve Hammack informed me by email that there was no paper trail whatsoever and no process that he was aware of. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello? Sorry.
Cisco?
It's
100
Madison,
people
it's
got,
you again. Go ahead.
Got requests for resignation letters from Gavin Newsom.
Sorry, say that again?
100 city managers in San Francisco, commission heads, etc., were requested by Gavin Newsom to please submit resignation letters.
Okay.
And basically I told him, sometimes you got a lot of fire under it, which is what Santa Cruz needs.
I hear you.
We need some heads to roll. We need the audits have been happening, but it's all been secretive because the Sentinel will not publish it. And we need some leadership from these people to say, look, if you're not doing your job, you need to go.
Now, what
and
kind
they
of
love
now,
to now, launder the
now, what kind of audits are you talking about, caller? And maybe be more specific. We can actually make Public Records Act requests to reveal these audits. Go ahead.
I think that the entire city, we need to do Information Act requests on every individual.
Okay, I'm asking you which audits you're aware of have been done recently. You just said there were some audits done. What do you know about that?
That's the beginning.
Do you know anything about do you know anything about the audits, caller, that you've been talking about?
Right, right. That's how they get gone.
Do you know anything about any specific audits that have been done?
Yes. The
Good.
Park director is gone because of it. The finance director. All these people are gone, Robert, because of it.
Okay, well, the question is, if you know there's an audit done, then I would suggest you make a Public Records Act request to get the results of that audit. And there, you know, if it's a public document, you have a right to it. That's my suggestion. I'd like to see it when you get it, too.
We need to have a fire lit under it like San Francisco.
Well, the way you light a fire under it is you actually walk into the department with a written request and you make it, or you email them a request, caller.
Right, I know. Well, let's do it.
Why not? You know, let's get into it. I mean,
I know. I totally agree with you, Robert. The whole city needs to get into it.
Well, don't agree with me. Go do it. I mean, I know you're an intelligent and active member of the community, Madison. You go to a lot of meetings, and you have a lot of information, and you have a lot of passion around these issues. If you had more documents, I think that would be even, give a stronger basis for what you're saying.
I've been sitting here watching their city rot. Watching their kids rot.
Right, but rhetorical claims like this are not helpful unless you have substantive documents to back up your concerns. That's my problem, and that's why I keep turning down the mic on this. Go ahead.
All these people lost their positions. What other evidence do you need?
Need evidence that there's a reason for them to lose their positions. You need evidence that would put us in a position to make them lose their positions if indeed, and I tend to agree with you, some of them, like the city manager, the city attorney, and the chief of police, need to be replaced. Thanks for calling. We're on Free Radio. You're listening to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. In the studio with me, Ike Solem and Brian Holtze. Holtze, here is I'm not sure. Are you a vet, Holtze? You're not a vet. We got no use for you. I don't know why we even have you in the studio. You're a veteran, though, of the war against the poor in Santa Cruz.
Yes.
And you've gotten citations recently, but not from the Santa Cruz police, from the Capitola or the sheriffs?
If I meet them and I run my mouth, with the exception of two times. One time I was chewing bubble gum, they thought I was drunk. And they said they could legally hold me for 5 hours.
Well, what's the last ticket you got?
The last one was camping yesterday.
Camping yesterday. Now, by camping, do you mean like setting up a large tent, equipment, barbecuing a pig over a spit, perhaps?
I was sitting there playing my music.
Playing your music?
My appointment.
This was at 10 o'clock at night. You were screaming loudly, waking up residents.
I wanted to get in this town.
What time of day were you playing your music?
Classical or rock and roll.
What
like
time
oldies.
Of day?
Oh, what time of day?
Yeah.
In the mornings. And
where was this?
In the Capitola by the 41st in Capitola.
And were you on public property or were you?
I was on the
in
property
the mall.
Where everybody that
in the mall,
everyone
the Capitola
that works
mall.
In those stores, they all know me.
Were they in the? Were you in the mall?
No, I was sitting there. Actually, I wasn't even playing my music.
Were you on
a public
sidewalk?
I was only sitting down.
Where
outside.
Were you?
I was sitting in front of the Book Cafe.
In front of the that's inside
and,
inside a mall.
Yeah, but this,
although there is
this
some
office of that.
There is, wait a
minute.
There is
a
there, wait. Hold it. There is a right to be in a mall
yeah,
in
there
a public
is a right.
place.
And I
so,
just
what
bought
there?
A cup of coffee from the bookstore, and I said, "I'm sitting here drinking my coffee." He said,
uh-oh,
"Well,
coffee.
Somebody called on you. It's impossible unless there is some." Weirded
maybe the
out.
Person who sold you the coffee.
There are people who are so weirded out when they walk by you and see your look, they go, oh, God, a bum.
Yeah,
maybe they lost
bum,
their business
bums on coffee,
bums,
on caffeine. That could be serious.
You know, I think the only people that could be like that is people that own businesses and bums bother them.
So anyway, this is about...
You know, it has to be somebody where a bum has hurt you.
So this was at midday,
not,
and you
like,
were in the Capitol Mall playing some music.
Yeah, and
then what happened?
He came up and I said, look, you know, this is impossible. You called the police. I haven't been here long enough for... There would be a phone call. It's two people. I'm the first guy at the book cafe. Nobody's, I ordered a cup of coffee right at 8 a.m. And he said, well, I don't know you here, and I don't want your, you can't be here. Like, in other words, just like, you don't belong here. Get lost. And I said, no. I said,
no, wait a minute, hold it. To an armed officer of the law,
I said,
he's fully uniformed, you told him no?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead, it sounds interesting.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't look like it, but I've tutored the governor of Nigeria's daughter and prime minister of Ethiopia's daughter. I've tutored a lot of people in, like, statistics.
Trying to pull rank on us here.
I've tutored very, very good mathematics and
you were trying
skills,
to tutor this particular Capitola officer.
And corporate... The lower
so what did the officer
law.
Say?
Well, he just looked at me and I said, no, I know my laws. I've researched them. I'm going to be out here getting harassed. I want to know the laws. I want to know how
caller,
I can claim
caller,
this.
Stay on the line. Don't go. Keep ringing. We're going to put you on in just a minute. Go ahead, though.
I want to know how and where I can play my music and what violations I'm violating.
Good. Very good.
Right? So that's this way I'm always on top of the game because I'm already...
And also, I don't want to be treated like a piece of shit just because you don't like the way I look.
I'm already being in a position where I look...
And the Capitol officer, of course, courteously pulled out his rule book and showed you the law.
Yeah, and I was like, you know...
Wait a minute, did he do that?
No, he just said, you can't be homeless. I said, I have a residence. I live in Union City.
Now, what did he say? You can't be homeless?
Yeah, he said... No,
wait a minute, did he say that? Did he say, you can't be homeless, or did he say something else?
He said, we don't like homeless people in Capitola. Exactly
we don't like
said.
Homeless people
yes.
in Capitola.
He said, go over the hill or 2 miles this way to Soquel or to downtown. And I said, you know what? If you don't want me here, then get my fiancé out of your hospital because it's in your town.
And that's why, actually, you come to Capitola.
That's why I'm
because
here.
You visit the 7th
visit
Avenue
her.
Facility. We have a caller. Let's see what the caller's got to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Brian.
My friend, Robert. I grew
Madison,
up
you're back. Call number 3. Watch out. Go ahead.
I know. They own the book cafe. Let me tell you, we hung out with homeless people, namely William Ackerman. Who's now
slow down. Who owns the book cafe? What are you talking about?
A friend of mine.
Hold it. What are you talking about?
She wants her name on the radio. But
I don't. You really have to slow down. You have to be a little more coherent, or I am going to, you know, turn down your mic. So let me ask you again, or begin again.
Campus.
Begin
there
again.
There is no way they ever would do anything like that to a musician.
Women, there's no way. Who would ever do what?
Welcome with this family, trust me.
What are you talking about?
The people who own Capitola Book Cafe.
Well, I don't think he's saying that the Capitola Book Cafe did it. He's just saying a police officer showed up.
Call on a musician, trust me.
Yeah, it wasn't Capitola Book
Cafe. Yeah, her husband booked some big boys.
Okay, it had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, I don't think it was the Capitola Book Cafe necessarily that did it. But it was the Capitola Police Department.
He was basically trying to tell me that, because officers of the law, when they get called, they don't want to say, I just passed by and didn't like your look. They want to be legal about it and say, oh, well, we have a call on you, and make it look like I'm being called upon when I know that they just don't want to say, I didn't like your look and I wanted to meet you. Because it's usually only new officers that don't recognize you that want to
now,
come
Now, was this
up.
A new officer?
Yeah, and then...
Did he take you out to coffee? Did you do
no,
chat?
No, but the same day when I got the camping ticket, later that night, I'd also gotten a...
Before we get into that, is there anything else you want to say on the subject, Madison?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we have to call the Attorney General again and say they're bothering the people, he'll come down again.
That's after you make the Public Records Act request regarding the documents you haven't been allowed to see in terms of the audit, right there? Uh-oh. Yeah, I like to put my callers to work because I like to complain, too, but you also got to put in some work on these issues, or your complaints tend to be ignored and also tend to dissolve into the ether, whereas you may do some solid research. You can, like Ike and like I do, put these issues online where they can later be seen. So if you go somewhere else, or you disappear, or you get uninterested, you know, then your research remains. Ike, did you have something you wanted to say about this?
Well, you know, also, when you go to city officials, don't automatically assume that they're not on your side. Don't automatically come in with a chip on your shoulder. You know, come in and try and figure out the facts and ask them. For example, I said about this desalination thing. I said, okay, I came in very politely and I first raised the issue of why aren't you doing this with solar energy? And the reason I was so concerned about that is essentially with the current desalination plant design, what they're doing is turning fossil fuels into clean water. And this is the same city that publishes little articles praising themselves for their green approach to climate change. At the same time, they're putting in this massive desalination plant, and they say they're going to use it during drought years. And if anyone knows anything about California electricity, during a drought year, our dams stop producing electricity. Electricity prices go through the roof, and you burn natural gas, you burn oil, you burn coal to generate electricity. And there are desalination plants going in up and down the coast. It's a massive plan, It was funded through initially through Proposition 50, which was a dishonest bond measure, the Clean and Safe Drinking Water Act. And hidden in there was a subsection, Section 6, and this is, you know, what you find if you do the research, that allowed millions of dollars to go to these desalination contracts. Now, the city then, guess how the city got its hands on Proposition 50 money? They hired, for $88,000, they hired a consultant, Kessel Consulting, down in Monterey, who had been on the state water board, I believe. And so you see this sort of political connection between Arnold Schwarzenegger's government, the city of Santa Cruz, Camp Dresser McKee, and a whole host of other firms who are looking to make millions of dollars off building desalination plants. Some of these desalination plants are actually going to be privately owned, which means you will be buying your water instead from a private corporation.
Is that going to be the case in Santa Cruz, in your opinion? Or?
Okay, well, now Santa Cruz says they are contracting to build the plant, so it's going to be owned by the city of Santa Cruz, they claim. Now, if you know anything about how the city of Santa Cruz operates, they might transfer it to private control. They do all kinds of things in their 3 p.m. meetings that don't meet the public eye.
Yeah, they have a lot on their consent agendas. In fact, there were some 23, 25 items on the consent agenda on Tuesday, and I think five or six items were actually items that actually had public discussion. One of those, actually, I mean, it's true, the one item that did have some controversy and has been batted about in the papers, which perhaps we'll talk about later, is the issue of triple fines for poor people who like to have open container drinks on Halloween but can't afford to go into the cafes. They get hassled. We have another caller calling in. Caller, we will let you in now, but if you're Madison, you get very short shrift. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Robert, I don't know where guy was.
Short shrift.
They just laid down the first $100,000 for this plant. Where was this man 2 years ago when I was bitching, eh, buddy? Where you been?
Now, he's been around, I think. If you go to indiebay.org, he was writing a year ago, and he was at public meetings. Where have you been hiding, Ike? Is that the deal? Madison has been looking for you. Why aren't you available? What's the deal?
Why haven't I stopped the city of Santa Cruz in its tracks? I don't know. I've not done enough. I feel guilty. I feel ashamed for not doing as much as I could have. But, you know, I think at the same time, you have to recognize this has been in the works for quite a while. And every single, what's remarkable here is that I look back through this, and every single desalination issue has been on the 3 p.m. consent agenda. They've never had it on the 7 p.m.
How many times has it come up on the consent agenda?
I've got probably about six times.
And how many times did you speak about it at City Council?
Oh, probably two or three, or I can't remember, three or four times now.
The question I wanted to ask you, and I want to get back to you too, Brian, about what happened to you at night with the camping ticket after you had your little interaction with the Capitola cop at the, you know, after the, you know, illegal coffee drinking and playing. Yeah. Apparently, you can't be a customer and play the guitar, or you can't look homeless. I know, whatever. I want to hear about that. But in fact, why don't we postpone that and then let's talk about why Rotkin and the council members, their response to your bringing up these issues both publicly, and I assume you made some, you know, some phone calls to them too, and some emails. That's probably also true, right?
Well, they started off by responding. So I raised the solar issue, and you said, "Well, you know," they said, "that's an important point, and we're glad you brought that up. That's a very valid point." And essentially, that was the email. I said, "Okay."
And so, that was that.
And I said, "Well, why didn't you ask Camp Dresser McKee to build an on-site solar panel system to try and provide?" And the thing is, this is being done in Australia. Australia has a very limited water supply, and they have
by Camp Dresser and McKee.
No, by separate.
Does Camp Dresser McKee ever build solar stuff with their?
No.
Well, what's the matter? Maybe you should be talking to Camp Dresser McKee. You could probably join the staff, work from within.
Well, the problem here is that you give these proposals to them and they're just not interested. And you ask, why aren't they interested? And then you look and you see, well, Chevron is trying to build liquefied natural gas terminals in California. ConocoPhillips is trying to expand their oil refineries in the Bay Area, and so is Texaco, so is Chevron. They are building a huge coal-powered plant on Navajo land, I believe.
What's happening in Santa Cruz? You said this issue has been raised six times on the consent agenda, which, again, is the agenda, for those who don't know, in the afternoon that just passes with a snap of the fingers unless somebody pulls it off the agenda. And then you only get to talk about it very briefly if you want to talk about any other items on the agenda. Rotkin has set in a new time limit on consent agenda items. It's not that new.
One minute.
It's actually, well, if you're thinking of the, you're thinking of the administrative agenda. The consent agenda says you can talk for, you can talk for 5 minutes, for 3 minutes. In fact, you can talk up to 5 minutes on a total of all consent agenda items. But once you've used up that 5 minute period, you can't talk on any consent agenda items. So if there are 23 items and you want to raise a couple of issues on four or five of them, you have about a minute each. But you can talk for 3 minutes on one and then 2 minutes on another, and then your time is up. Or you can divide your time. But if you want to talk on an administrative item agenda item, you can talk for 3 minutes on the first one and 1 minute on each successive item. That's their strange Rotkin rule that is duplicated nowhere else in the state that I know of in terms of city council meetings, though I admit I haven't done an exhaustive analysis of that. But again, you went to the council. They said, oh, yeah, we'd like solar panels. Did you raise the issue of war profiteering? Because I raise that issue. I say, why don't we have an investigation of the war investments in the city? Why don't we declare the city a war criminal-free zone and start, you know, providing some potential legal assistance to people who are trying to resist the war? You know, why don't we at least disinvest, not from Iran, according to what, you know, the Fuhrer wants us to do, what Bush plans to do with his whole drumbeat to invade Iran, but from those companies that are profiteering in Iraq, like apparently Camp Dresser and McKee, which we're spending how much money?
$2 million of city money so far, $2 million from the state so far, an unspecified amount of other money that's hidden in the water, in the department's water budget, and the plan then is to build, to go on and spend $100 million of city money on a large-scale desalination plant that will then, you know, they say they're only going to use it during drought years when energy costs are going to go through the roof. I doubt they'll even be able to operate it, to tell you the
truth. Have you ever talked to Mike Rotkin? He's very accessible. He's very amenable, unless you're carrying a sign into an ACLU meeting. So how haven't you given him a call and chatted with him about
that? Yeah, I've came into his office. I've tried to talk to him personally, you know, about getting the name of the Camp Dresser McKee consultant to talk to, and he's sort of run the waterline department by me. He smiles a lot and gives you nothing.
Well, what about Vice Mayor Coonerty, who's about to become mayor, or Mayor Emily Riley? She runs a bakery.
You know, I've asked them. I've even stopped my comments early at city council and said, you know, can you guys give me some feedback on this? And thank you for your comments.
Right. Well, they will always tell you, although it's not true, because they have a choice of making any kind of comment they want. We can't act on this issue at the city council meeting. I don't think you're asking them to pass a resolution. You're asking for some information, maybe an FYI, a request from the staff for some investigation.
Well, the latest thing I've asked for is, why don't you guys put this to a public vote? Why wasn't this ever put on the public ballot? I mean, can't the city of Santa Cruz, the people of Santa Cruz, look at this desalination thing, judge it on its merits, and say, and vote for or against
it? But that would be a waste of money. I mean, for example, Arnie Schwarzenegger has shown us we don't need to have the Iraqi war on the ballot, and Mike Rotkin specifically moved to not to remove the Iraqi war from the Santa Cruz City ballot when it came. Actually, it was the impeachment issue. It was either the impeachment or the Iraqi war last year, because that was not necessary to do that. The city council could simply pass a resolution. Of course, the real reason they don't want these issues on the ballot is it'll draw people to the left into the electoral vote and make it more likely that you'll get people perhaps of your mindset on city council really want to investigate what's going on here instead of letting it zip by on the consent agenda and be passed off by the mayor. But let me get back to you, Brian. Oh, by the way, you're tuned to Free Radio. For those of you who just tuned in, it's 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. In the studio with me, Ike Solem, who is, who are you, Ike? And what are your credentials?
I'm currently a freelance writer, sort of an ex-scientist and member, ex-UCSD graduate student.
We also have Brian Holtz, who's a homeless pastry chef, short-order cook.
My Mediterranean food right now, I'm learning every Indian cuisine dish. And
you're going to be a deli expert. And you're also becoming an expert in dealing with the savage Capitola police.
Yeah, after as many tickets as I've had, I pretty much know how to talk to them. But, what I was going to say about that funny thing.
well, before you go on to the next thing, let's finish up the Capitola cop thing.
That's
you were there.
That
way you're going to finish that. Good. Okay. Well, go ahead. So we reached the point where the Capitola cop said,
yeah,
we don't like homeless people in Capitola.
He ran at me a second time. Just to rub it in, he said, he saw me and my friend's an oil painter, right, out here, and he has his oil painting on top of his van, because
you know, wait, but was this what, this was after the whole the Capitola Cafe thing? Or?
Yeah, this is after.
Well, before we move on to that, I want to know what was the outcome of the Capitola Cafe? Did he sit down and have a cup of coffee?
Did he take
you in chains away?
No, he introduced himself to me in his own little way.
How sweet.
And then later that night when he saw me.
Wait, before we get on to that,
uh-huh.
You say he introduced himself. You mean he said, I'm Officer Clancy?
He said, I'm...
What was his name, by the way?
I can't quite remember. I have it on my ticket.
Okay, maybe we can get it, because he wrote your ticket later. But he didn't write you a ticket at the cafe.
No. But
and what did he say to you? His final party
words.
He
was young,
right?
Right. And I was looking at him, and I was like, I got to be at least 10 years older than this kid. And I knew he was new, but when I said, oh, you're new, and he goes, no, I've been not working for a year. You know, it was his way of saying for a year, but not on this shift, and you're not one of the regular.
But what he didn't give you a ticket at that point.
Yeah, I said, look, man, you know, my wife, fiance, whoever is down the street,
uh-huh.
and she's been there a year and a half, and I have nowhere to go. I'm not going to rent an apartment out here so I can live in two cities while she's in the hospitals. No. So I come out here.
So you aren't homeless. You're renting an apartment?
No, I said I'm not going to rent an apartment or get a motel. Gotcha. I'm just going to come out here and visit her.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't mind being, you know, so I'm not even...
So
half the time. I sleep in a van or
somewhere else.
What
was his response to your explaining the situation about your wife and so forth?
Well, he was like, well, move along then and all this stuff. And I was like, well, I just wanted to tell him.
And did you immediately jump up and start moving along?
No, I thought he was lying because the amount of time I was
lying
sitting there
about
and
what?
Nobody was walking by.
Oh, about whether he'd gotten a complaint
that,
or not.
That somebody called upon you.
Because, I think this shows something before we go any further. I think it shows that, you know, you're sensitive, not necessarily to the threat of getting a ticket, because you were standing up for the situation. He might have given you a ticket anyway.
Yeah.
But you're sensitive to the idea that you might be offending other people by what you do, although, and perhaps you're too sensitive.
Well,
because,
wait a minute,
let me finish this.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you're too sensitive because you have a right to be in a shopping center, particularly if you bought some coffee. You probably have a right to play music there. I think you do, too, as long as you're not engaging in unreasonable noise. So if a few people are offended, well, that's how it might be. It's a public place. Some people get offended. I get offended by cops walking around with guns on their hips
sometimes.
People
really get offended when I try to do something like go in and ask for their owner's name and stuff like this to find out who the... It took me forever to find out the Chinese guy that owns the whole complex and where his office was.
Why did you want to find that out?
Because I wanted to explain to him, you know, like...
Why you were there?
Why I was there and... make it like it's like in law you have to post something like a public notice. So I have to tell the owner himself that
well, see I don't
know,
think you have to do I think you have a right to be in a,
yeah,
in a shopping center
right
regardless of what they think of you.
But I wanted to
but you're trying
know,
to be considerate
to it, I wanted to be considerate yeah and this Look, way he knew me yeah, and then and it's like you know
you can't please these folks. I got to warn
and
you
it's like,
I don't bother,
people really don't even know what I do or why I'm out
again,
here.
Again, what I want to get to, and I've been trying to do this for the last 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
is what was the conclusion of this conversation? What did
the conclusion was that
what did he do at the end of this particular
conversation?
Yes.
All he did was take my name,
right?
You know, because I said I know you're dying to know my name because you didn't want to ask me.
You don't have to give your name. By the way, to those listening, don't give your name to a police officer.
But
unless,
he goes, I
know,
said, here, just in
to,
case, because here, you know, I'll give it to you. Run my name. I have no tickets, this and this and this and this. I got a perfect driver's license and, you know, all that. But I have just camping tickets in this city and all that stuff, right? And then he found out that I used to live in Los Angeles, right? And that was it. And he's like, well, what are you doing here and this and that? And I told him.
You had no right to interrogate you either.
Yeah, and I said, well, now that you know, because you have to, they don't know you, they might think, well, this guy might be on America's Most Wanted. So once he ran my name and found out I was okay, then he just sort of, like, tried to say, well, you know, he couldn't back down. It's like the ego that men have. They don't want to back out of something once they were already in that direction.
What did he end up saying? I mean, that's
so he ended up saying, well, still, move two blocks. You can't be here, even though I was refusing to leave.
Right.
And then a few hours later, he saw me.
What did he do? Did he just walk away? He just drove off. Okay, and you stayed there with
and
your coffee.
I walked by, and the town drunk, and some Irish guy who was staying in the Best Western, he's from Ireland, some 70-year-old man.
Wait a minute. Before, when the cop took off.
This is hours after he left.
No. You're jumping ahead.
Uh-huh.
You're still working on the first incident. You stayed and had your coffee. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I stayed and had my coffee.
And how did you feel okay doing that?
Or were you
feeling uncomfortable? Did you continue to play music?
No. I wasn't actually playing the music. I was just like had my musical instruments out.
Right. Were you about? Did he deter you from playing the music? Did he stop?
No, there's nobody to play for, so why would I play music?
Right.
But he just saw, I guess somebody saw me, though. Look, well, you know, maybe.
So you weren't even playing music when this came out.
It could have been anybody walking, okay, trying to walk into the book cafe.
All right, so let's skip ahead now,
because
I know you wanted to, talk about the other.
The other thing was.
Actually, you called me on the phone about this a couple
days
ago.
Yeah, this is when I called you.
Involved
I said that I had that ticket, yeah. That was when I called you.
Yeah, you ran into B.O.B., who's an old-time homeless fellow, and sometimes a bit intoxicated.
Yes.
And you were trying to help him and somebody else out, right?
Him and the other guy were laughing, sitting up. Right.
And this was looked, this was in the shopping center?
Yeah, I saw a bottle of
this
scotch.
This was in the shopping center? Same place? Or?
Yeah, on the grassy knoll thing by the Osh, by Orchard
that was
Supply.
So that was another place, not the Capitol
Book. Yeah, this
book
is right,
cafe,
right across from the parking lot from where I was. So I hadn't left the parking lot. I was just on the other side of it. But
I got you.
I saw the bottle and the 12-pack of Heineken and all these other stuff.
So he was drinking
and
pummeling.
And B.O.B. was swaying and falling down.
Intoxicated.
And the other man was 70 years old and fell and hit his head. So I went to Shell, and I have, like, I always carry a first aid kit in my bag, you know.
Right.
So I was trying to bandage this guy up, and I had witnesses that I was like, you know, one of the members from Osh that worked there and the people from Shell, and even the owner of the Shell or one of the owners or managers of the gas station gave me a free cup of coffee just to sober them up because he saw what I was doing.
Luckily, he didn't see your musical instruments.
I said, I don't want you to go to jail. So afterwards, I got so upset. Normally, I wouldn't. I called you because it so upset me
now, what
that
upset
I did
exactly?
The heroic thing by bandaging this old man, calling his son to pick him up. And then the same cop goes, oh, you're still here. And he goes, you know what? I told you. I said, I told him what happened. I said, you want to give me a ticket? Go ahead. I said it sarcastically. And he goes, I think I will. And that's how I got
it. You have a
ticket.
Copy of your ticket with
Oops.
You?
Huh? Yeah.
Why don't you show it to me? I'd like to see it. I have to look up the Capitol Camping Ordinance. Ike, any comments on this situation? Don't feel obliged.
One of the things I did after looking up, I said, well, what are we doing with, I went through the city council's entire funding list, and just maybe this applies, but, Lynn Robinson and Cynthia Matthews both have listed contributions from police officers in Santa Cruz by quite a large amount. Jim Howes gave $290 to Lynn Robinson. Jerry Rodriguez gave $100 to Lynn Robinson. Zach Friend, the police spokesman, gave $100 to Cynthia Matthews. Rudy Escalante, and he was the guy involved in that undercover operation on the do-it-yourself
DIY
Santa Cruz.
Where Vogel, the deputy chief, investigated
also
himself.
Also gave $100 to Cynthia Matthews. Now, of course, your thing about city council contributions is any donation under $100 doesn't have to be reported. And about at least a third of most of their contributions come from them.
Mm-hmm.
So there is you have to recognize there's a close relationship between the police of Santa Cruz and some of the council members. And I don't know whether that involves the police, but I think, the police are unlikely to bust a drunk guy in a business suit who comes staggering out of a bar. And I think that is the police do zoom in on, look at personal appearance too much. And, I would say if you want to commit crime in Santa Cruz County, you want to, get a haircut and wear a business suit, and then you can get away with a lot of things.
I would love to have you post, that information, unless you haven't, if you haven't already done so, like on the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz website, Santa Cruz Indie Media, about what the campaign contributions were. Has that been posted yet?
Well, my goal here is to do actually something much bigger, an open Open Secrets, that website. They post congressman and senator campaign contributions. Now, there's nothing like that really on a city or state level here in California, and I think that some of the political groups in California should coordinate so that statewide political contributions to our state politicians at the city, county, and state level should be online and searchable by any individual. That's quite a big project. So I can do Santa Cruz County. I can maybe even do some of this, but I think it'll need a searchable online database and someone who's willing to host that website. And that's just sort of a long-term project that people can think about.
Well, I'm interested here, and while you've been doing that, I've been checking out the Capitola Police Department citation that you got, Brian, which
funny.
Is for camping 15.10.050. I'm still
and the funny thing is, I save every receipt.
I'm trying to track it down. Well, they
if
don't really care.
I buy a cup of coffee, I save the receipts.
They couldn't
I have
care
receipts
less
for all morning.
Let's see here. Fire
so how
protection.
Could I possibly be camping?
I can't. I'm looking for Title 15 to see if we actually... And there is no 15.12.050. There's 15...
Well, point, half the point, tickets they write me, I can't find the code.
15.12 is mobile homes, and there is a section 15.12.010, trailers on private property.
That was my bag that I'm wheeling around, my suitcase.
So maybe you had a very, very small trailer that was like, you know, what, about 6 inches by 2 feet
yeah.
high. It's unlawful for any person to place, keep, or maintain any mobile home or any land. Got to have a permit.
So your backpack is considered into that.
I can't. That's kind of hard to say. Although we must say that Mr. TV recently went to court. That's a guy who does a little kind of mock TV show downtown in front of a blank screen. So it's a TV. He was given a ticket for approaching people soliciting, for passing the hat after his show, which is not soliciting, by the way, although it sounds like it would be normally considered soliciting. It's only soliciting under the code section if you're not engaging in a musical or entertainment performance. That's the exception to the anti-panhandling ordinance passed by Rotkin, Matthews, and the city council members of old. So I don't see, I would say... This ticket isn't worth the paper it's written on, but maybe there's a code section that hasn't appeared online that he's aware of. I would...
Well, eventually I'm going to fight all of them. That's why I never show up. They promise to appear.
I'll look again for 15.12.020. Is that right? I guess what it says. And there's no topics found matching your search. So apparently officer, let me see his name again, officer,
Dugan.
Capitola Officer Dugan, badge 531, call home. I mean, for heaven's sake, I'm not sure what you're doing. It sounds like it's either very obscure or it's an invisible law that's already disappeared. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. We're talking about city council behavior and apparently engaging in support for large out-of-town contractors who simultaneously have large war profiteering activities or non-activities or getting a lot of money in Afghanistan and Iraq. But when you try to talk to the city council members about them, they smile at you and don't return your calls or say thank you very much. And we're also talking with Brian Holtz about his tickets and how he got a camping ticket for assisting an elderly person who was intoxicated because of previously he had refused to move when improperly told to do so by a Capitol police officer. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Okay, Robert. How
Madison, call number 5. Welcome back to Free Radio. What's up?
Well, they just hired somebody for $80,000 a year, I think, to be the global warming specialist.
Yeah.
So why don't? I mean, these are reasonable people. If they know the town wants it. You say, well, look, global warming, the desal plant is going to make this much heat, and our own little cisterns are going to make this much heat, and we have, you know, block-by-block water and solar plans that we want.
Madison, you know, you're straying here. We are talking about something particular, so link it up in the next 15 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, that's what I think we need to get together and have a little forum, a town hall on this, and then get the signatures and get the people with Neighborhood Watch Your Ass or Downtown Neighbors, not Santa Cruz Neighbors, because they're feds, and then go down there, reasonably present it, because...
Okay, what are you talking about, though? Reasonably present what about what particular subject are you discussing?
Like the trust in staff, because that's how you work.
What are you talking about?
Well, RDA is they oversee a lot of the federal stuff.
It's a little problem here because, see, Madison, we have to talk. We're talking kind of taking one thing at a time. I know it's a little compartmentalized, doesn't get the whole sweep of things, but that's what we're doing. But thanks for your call. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. Ike, you got something you want to comment on?
Look, one thing we haven't really spoke about is Camp Dresser McKee and Hurricane Katrina recovery contracts.
Okay.
And that's something that just came out recently. Bloomberg, which is a business news service, reports that the Mississippi governor, his name is Barbour, and he's, and let's just run through what they said in their news report. And last October 18th, Henry Barbour, the nephew of the governor, registered to lobby for Camp Dresser and McKee Inc., Cambridge, Massachusetts-based engineering firm that had also been a client of his uncle's firm in Washington. Now, here's an interesting fact. It's not in the article. His uncle's firm in Washington is Barbour, Griffiths, and Rogers. And Camp Dresser McKee has given $300,000 a year on various occasions to this firm and lobbying services. Now, this lobbying firm is also the one, if you know who Iyad Alawi is, Iyad Alawi is...
He was the first prime minister of the pseudo-government that replaced Paul Bremer's little shop. But, you know, let me interrupt you on this, Mike, because I think, you know, important as all these facts are about CD&M, mm-hmm. Camp Dresser and McKee, what's more important and more interesting to people is how the local government is or isn't reacting to this. Where are we in this process? What's the next time this issue is likely to come up on the city council agenda? How can people do something about it, and what can they do about it? I mean, they can obviously get some research from you, and hopefully you'll be posting more stuff on Indie Bay, and you'll certainly have an opportunity to talk about it a little bit more. But I really like to focus on the particular actions of particular politicians locally or their inaction and what we as a community can do about it.
Well, I at first assumed that the city council was just unaware of these facts, that this was something, a side contract with the water department, and that the city council, once I brought this to their attention, since they had, you know, gone on record publicly as opposing the Iraq war, that they would be interested in perhaps passing an ordinance.
Nancy Pelosi is on record as opposing the Iraq war. Do you think she's going to cut off funding? Don't hold your breath.
You know, that's just it. And so why can't, you know, it seems to me a sensible thing to do if the city really wanted to oppose the Iraq war. You know, when these Iraq oil and electricity unions came to town, Emily Riley showed up and gave the keys to the city.
Oh, it's so sweet.
And she gives the keys to the city coffers to one of the firms that's engaged in screwing over these unions in Iraq.
Well, you've got to please all your constituents. You've got to please the people that elect you, the wealthy people, and then the people that you have to kind of sucker into voting for, you know, the students and the progressives, that sort of thing.
So at that point, I was just amazed, and I said, you know, this is just out of hand. What's going on here? You know, why on earth would you, you know, and obviously it's a behind-the-scenes thing. And so why wouldn't the city of Santa Cruz then pass a resolution saying, okay, we're really opposed to the Iraq war, and so we are going to ban the city from contracting with any of these firms that have engaged in war profiteering with these shady no-bid contracts in Iraq?
How about an online petition to that effect, Ike?
I think it would be a good idea.
Would you be willing to put one online, do you think?
I think if people... You know, how does an online petition work? How do you get this onto the...
I would, you know, I frankly have never done an online petition. Usually I'm out there like a fool with a petition on the streets at,
I think you need to do that. I think you need real signatures from the city voters, you know.
Well, but you can start stirring up interest in it by an online petition, letters to the Sentinel. I think you've had... Now, has the mainstream media responded at all, or the so-called alternative media?
Oh, my gosh. Now, this is really where the local news coverage of this issue has been... I hate to say it, but just incredibly atrocious. And I've tried to contact the Metro, sent letters to the Sentinel, and...
City on a Hill?
City on a Hill. I've tried to contact City on a Hill multiple times.
That's
about
the University newspaper. Surely they're interested in these issues.
Well, one of the main...
Mike is an instructor up there, Mike Rotkin. They want to know what their instructors are doing, supporting the Iraqi war. Certainly Students Against War would take up the cry, right?
I hope so. But, you know, Brent Haddad is one of the environmental studies professor at UC Santa Cruz. Brent Haddad is one of the main sort of pushers of the desalination thing, and I looked up his background. He used to work for he used to advocate for water privatization in the state of California, and now the university hired him as their environmental studies guy in water.
Yeah, but we know the university is going to go the wrong way, but the student media, City on a Hill, the Fish Wrap Live, I guess the Redwood Review probably wouldn't be too interested.
You know, I tried to run several stories by City on a Hill Press. Here's one that I thought City on a Hill Press would just love to pick up, that the university claimed to be putting biodiesel in their buses while they were really fueling them with fossil diesel. It's another story I wrote on Indie Bay. I contacted City on the Hill multiple times saying, hey, this is a great story. Wouldn't you guys want to run with this and show that the university is just actually straight out lying? You know, I went to the university office and asked, are you guys running these things in biodiesel? And one of my sources there found out that, you know, they said, told me, no, they're just filling them with diesel and pretending to run them on biodiesel. And the City on the Hill would not cover it.
Robert, I called Madison, you're back. Number six, gentleman. Go ahead.
I called the same papers as this gentleman, the same problem. the rah-rah rag, City on the Hill.
About what issue?
City on the Hill in the 80s was radical.
About
right
what
now
issue?
It's a rah-rah rag.
About what issue did you call them?
They're all rah-rah rags.
What about what issue did you call
about
them?
About the water issue, desal, and going green instead of bugs in your hair green. How about some?
So you called them about the desalinization issue?
Yes, I did.
Oh, cool. I'm glad to hear that. Maybe you and I can get together.
Yeah, and my neighbor came to talk to me, and I said, buddy, I'm the only one who's been barking. I'm getting sick and tired of being the only one barking around here.
Get them public documents. That's my advice. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. You know, I think we're going to take a little recorded break here to give everybody a chance to go use the bathroom and steal a few computers. Just kidding about that one. Possibly to sleep overnight illegally in our studio. This is an inside joke that Free Radio Santa Cruz people may understand. Any case, it's just kidding. We don't sleep overnight in our studio. That would be a violation of everything that's sacred. In any case, here's a little from my famous, or perhaps not so famous, but typical tapes I play. This is a little older. I'm going to play a little archival tape. It's actually, we haven't played it before, but here it is. In fact, I don't even know what it is. We'll find out when I turn it on.
We're here in front of the Coffee Roasting Company. It's about 20 after 5 on the 5th of July.
We can't advertise because it's on the radio.
Well, you can. No, you can say what you want. But
we're on this one downtown Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we already said that. What's your name? Who am I talking to?
You don't remember me.
Vaguely.
Oh, yeah, it remembers Dead Man.
So Dead Man, you, of course, Dead Man. Now, Dead Man, I kind of remember the name. Now,
Notorious, Wanted Dead or Alive and all that.
Now,
well,
it wants you, Dead Man.
It's an A.K.A. Dead Man. It's Kerrigan Dean Logan,
okay.
A.K.A. Dead Man.
What's the word, Dead Man, you want to pass on to Free Radio today?
Well, you know, we used to do these cool recordings back when Santa Cruz was cooler. It wasn't as cool as it used to be when it was fun, but we could still play music. Remember, I used to be the drumming, and there were guys out here beating on things and making noise, too. But, I mean, I was doing the beat, and people would go dancing, and it was cool. But the cops were really assholes. Remember, I hate cops. Remember, I'm the guy that really hate cops. Anyway, I had a lot of fun.
What years are we talking about?
We're talking last year, remember?
Last year. Okay.
Free radio. So, anyway,
well,
with the problems with the cops in Santa Cruz and running us people who live in trees away and stuff like that, I had to move to brighter. I see, I'm a veteran, and I'm an old Eagle Boy Scout, so I moved on to the veterans to say, hey, I'm a doctor, I'm old man needing help and such, and I'm living in trees.
Please continue.
Yeah, we had to stop because there were some of them raucous, unreasonable noise Harley Davidsons. Because my brother's from 81st Avenue just cruised by. Yeah, support. Anyway, what we were talking about. I have problems here. And everybody, we won't call us people who live in trees any bad names because, God, we are really tired of it. We're people, too. Anyway, it was
us.
Well, no, don't live in a factory grown. I'm a carpenter. I used to grow buildings, but no, I'm disabled and can't afford housing like normal people, as they call themselves, with machines and stuff, live. So in order to eat good and not have to eat in soup kitchens and stuff, I live in a tree. But it's a beautiful tree in San Francisco. See,
how long have you been in Santa Cruz this time?
Right now, I've been here since 10 o'clock this morning on a mission because a girl came down here looking for me 8 months ago and she got lost here, stuck here because of the cops, and has been living on the railroad tracks for the last 8 months.
How is she doing? Have you found her yet?
I found her. She's okay. And she knows where my lost son is, so it's really important. But the crux of the situation. If you notice, walking trying to have fun in downtown Santa Cruz nowadays, look around. Listen how quiet it is. Shh. Careful. Oh, that guy moved his skateboard. No, there was a chair. There are no skateboards. There are no people with long hair. I see not one tie-dye shirt. I see no hippies other than the guy holding the microphone, the guy that, he's on the radio, so he actually wears a suit and tie and looks like you, normal people.
Yeah,
I'm joking. Right.
Nice.
Hey, he looks like a hippie like me. Anyway, I don't look like a hippie. What do I look like? Can you tell?
Support your local San Francisco. I don't know what you look like, but it certainly is cool what you sound like.
Yeah,
85th
I want to thank you, Dick.
No, wait.
I've got to
hold on. Real quick, 5 seconds.
Yes?
I'm living in Golden Gate Park. You can find me on YouTube on, San Francisco Golden Gate Park Drum Circle.
And that dead man can sometimes stray, but, you know, often he has a lot of useful information. And if you have useful information, please call in, 427-3772, still patiently in the studio as we go through some of these tapes, which actually, we'll try to find a little better information for you. Like to hear from you out there, 427-3772. Also want to announce that there was to be a meeting of the Measure K, Lowest Priority for Enforcement Marijuana Commission. That was supposed to happen tonight, actually, and we were then going to get a report from Commission member Anita Henry. However, Tina Scholl, one of the staffers, sort of insiders on the city staff who kind of, they run around performing a number of jobs, in my mind, kind of... I have a low opinion of these staffers, frankly, because I think they are functionaries who facilitate a behind-the-scenes committee system that actually works against public accountability and public information. For example, this commission, the Measure K Commission, was supposed to be available 5 or 6 months ago. Police officers are supposed to report to the commission, or I should say to the city manager, who would pass on reports to the commission about marijuana, actually not just medical marijuana, any marijuana citations that were given in the city of Santa Cruz were supposed to be the lowest enforcement priority, and that was supposed to be documented by a report from the police department. Police department didn't like that idea, so they got the city attorney and the city manager and the city council to file a lawsuit, which has essentially eliminated that provision from the Measure K, which was passed by 63% of the voters last year, in spite of the fact the city council refused to endorse it. City council could have passed it by its own vote, 4-3. They refused to do that. They could have put it on the ballot. They refused to do that. They had to, instead, people had to go around getting thousands of signatures to put it on the ballot. Then when it would finally pass, what did the city do? Behind closed doors, they decided to sue to stop it from being properly enforced. They were successful with the aid of attorney Ben Rice, who supposedly representing Theodora Carey, and I'm still trying to get the straight story on this, and Ben, if I got this wrong, I'll apologize later, but it looked to me like you and the city stipulated to an agreement that essentially gutted the measure. Namely, it removed the requirement that a police officer be available for inquiries from the commission, that they follow a form, and that they, you know, essentially provide regular reports. All those provisions were gutted under the excuse that we are a charter city and that somehow the city council can't direct the police department to do anything. We know the city council can't direct the police department to do anything, yet nonetheless, the city council passes all kinds of measures which the city manager then directs the police department to do. Using this shallow pretext, you have the city has essentially gutted this whole thing. We have a caller. This is Madison again. She will get about 10 seconds to justify herself. So, Madison, get ready to talk fast if it's you. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
You asked for a contact.
Go ahead.
For the Attorney General, remember last week regarding Measure K?
Okay.
So we can complain about non-performing politicians?
Go ahead.
There's two ways to do it. You can look up on the web Attorney General California and submit on there, or you can call this number. And if you wait till the end, they have a recording where you can leave a message.
Okay.
And the phone number is
916-445-9555. And have you ever actually gotten a response?
You want me to repeat it?
I can do that. 916-445-9555.
Yeah, and Jerry's actually in Oakland.
Have you ever actually gotten a response from this number?
Yeah, he's been here in person a couple times for me.
He's very much
watching Santa Cruz.
And in terms of that response, tell me what success you've had in terms of any issues that you pressed.
Well, the audits happened. We've gotten sleep in our neighborhood. The cops called me and totally freaked out. They couldn't believe it.
I mean, you've gotten what? Hold it. You've gotten what in your neighborhood? What have you gotten in your neighborhood?
Pardon me?
You said you've gotten something in your neighborhood.
Yeah, we didn't sleep since I bought my home.
Sleep in your neighborhood.
Not one night of the week.
Okay.
over 3 years.
So, again, the question I have for you is, I guess it's hard to understand, what actual concrete result did you get from people calling this number? Because I'm happy to have people call this number, but I'd like to know what actual results you had.
Well, those are actual results. The Attorney General called before he became Attorney General, and then he whatever, and now he is, and he came. He's been down here twice.
So the Attorney General, wait a minute, either, this is the Attorney General's number, right?
Right.
So when you call this number, are you suggesting the Attorney General personally called you back?
Well, I don't need to discuss my personal relationship with the Attorney General. Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is we're talking about other people who are likely to be making this kind of a phone call. And frankly, I'm concerned about giving out credible information on the air. So if you're suggesting, A, that it's a personal matter between you and the Attorney General, it's probably not going to help anybody because it's dependent on your personal relationship with that person. On the other hand, if you're saying that anybody calling this number is going to get a reasonable response, that's information we need to know about.
For sure.
So which is it?
He knows that you have to use the courts in order to get the laws where they ought to be.
Which is it? Can an individual who is not can have a personal relationship with the Attorney General get a response?
Well, you call up and you tell them your problem, and then they give you the appropriate office.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you. Frankly, I didn't get a response, and I don't. We'll see. I mean, try it if you want. If you're successful, let me know. Go ahead, Ike.
Well, let's sort of draw the line between gathering information and making a legal case to change things. So like what you've done is
you're talking to Brian.
Brian is by collecting all those receipts. Now you have something that's actually the basis of a legal case.
Yeah.
Now what I want to do is more collect information from the government, and so the tool I can use there is the California Public Records Act. Now you can go. Now the thing about what they try to do to prevent you from getting that information is, first of all, they try and charge you for copies, but you can request electronic copies.
And they can claim they don't have electronic copies, mm-hmm. which is what the police department is doing with me.
And you have to make your request really specific, which means you have to do some background research. If you ask, I want all the documents from the water department, well, they have thousands and thousands of documents. So you have to do a little background research, figure out exactly what you want, submit your request in writing, and then they have 10 days to respond to you under the law of the California Public Records Act. And you have to wait your 10 days and see what they come up with. And that's really, that's sort of the process for acquiring. Now, there should be transparency. You should be able to walk into any office and request public records, and they'll just give them to you. But if they have, when they don't do that, you got to wonder why. You got to wonder, it's a public record. What are you trying to hide? And that's what comes to mind.
And, if you want to get an example of how this process operates and how slimy they can be, go online again to Santa Cruz Indy Media. And I posted a story today about the issue of the question about these RV bannings from the coastal lots. I got concerns from Donna Dice and Shane Maxfield, the couple that was helpful in helping homies for the homeless who were doing their 6-day protest at City Hall, supplying them with a bathroom in the form of a bathroom inside their RV. And they complained that Chief Ranger John Wallace was driving them away, demanding they remove their RV from parking lot A. Wallace actually agreed that he was doing this, but he claimed it was simply following the regulations when I talked to him about it 3 days ago, and that he was helpless in the face of this. They simply was trying to make sure that people followed the law and that they could move to another parking lot and so forth. But I wanted to find out what the process was by which parking lots, which are now, by the way, under target from the city, and the Downtown Commission meets in 2 weeks, the last Thursday of the month, they will be considering closing off all parking lots to anybody who doesn't have a vehicle or bicycle. That means walking into a parking lot will be illegal, perhaps unless you walk directly through. You won't be able to meet there, chat there, and if you have a vehicle there, you have to leave within 15 minutes, which is currently the law in parking garages. I call it the parking garage paranoia law. It was passed last year by the city council with, I think, one or two council members dissenting. So I wanted to find out, as Ike suggested, what the background was to this. When did the city council decide around RVs that certain parking lots could not contain RVs? And what basis did they make this? And did they talk to RV associations? Did they talk to poor people who are in RVs or homeless services where such people might be found? You know, did they? What kind of process happened? Did they have a community meeting about it? Was it as a consequence of pressure from people in the neighborhood? What was the basis for this? And I asked Steve Hammack this, and I sent him some emails, essentially making a Public Records Act request. And here's what he responded. And you can actually find this if you go to IndieBay, because I posted it. And this is what I got. It's posted as a story on Santa Cruz Indie Media. It's www.indiebay.org/Santa Cruz under the name Superintendent Hammack Stonewalls on RV Ban in Coastal Parking Lots. And this happened after a confrontation, several confrontations between Wallace and Donna Dice, who's an activist, as I mentioned before, who lives in her van, was a tenants' rights union Santa Cruz organizer before she was evicted from her housing. And she's an elderly woman. She's rather fragile. Her partner has got AIDS and hasn't had it for a long time, isn't in the best of health. But they do, I think, a lot of public service for poor and homeless people. And they are on the front lines to some extent dealing with people like Chief Ranger John Wallace, who he's a zealous guy. You know, he really believes what he's doing is right. He believes it's very appropriate to go into the Poganip and threaten people with citations unless they move on. And then 3 or 4 days later, if their campsite is still there, essentially destroy everything. Destroy it, not store it, not take things that might be of value, either a sentimental value or a survival value, but destroy it. He's acknowledged that. He said, it's too much trouble to store it, is what he said. And, you know, this is a procedure that was ruled unconstitutional in Fresno. I've told him this very candidly. We talked about it 3 days ago. I said, John, this is unconstitutional stuff. And he said, well, it's a mess. You should see the environment up there. It's wrecked. I'm just trying to save the environment. And I think he sincerely means it. The problem is that the consequence of what he does, given the fact that there are no legal places for people to sleep tonight in Santa Cruz other than for 40 people out of a population of 1,500 to 2,000 with a threat of a $95 citation, and that's only in the city limits. Brian here in the studio was in Capitola, so there's even got nastier kind of police behavior in Capitola. In Santa Cruz, the police, though they are giving twice as many citations as they were a year ago, are still probably reluctant to walk into a shopping center and demand you leave if you look homeless, because, mainly, I think, because of the work of a lot of people here in the community who said, do this, and we're going to cause a ruckus. We're going to raise the roof. We're going to, you know, complain. We're going to picket, which is what, for example, I do in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz every Sunday, or have for the last few Sundays, around the issue of Vice Mayor Coonerty, who's the chief worker there, and his support for the sleeping ban law. So, if you go to Indie Media, you'll find this Public Records Act request, which I made, and I said to him, "Dear Steve, following up on a phone message I just left you, I'm making a Public Records Act request regarding recent postings and or changes in the status of public parking lots in the city. Specifically, I'm looking for all documents, including memos, emails, notes, concerning a change in the status of parking lots in terms of restricting public access that has happened since January 1, 2007. It is my understanding that Ranger John Wallace is threatening and citing people during the day for parking their RVs in parking lot A along Westcliff Drive near the lighthouse. He is claiming the authority of Municipal Code 13.041010, which reads, whenever this code or any ordinance or resolution of the city designates public property being withdrawn for public access or use, having been limited and notice was posted, then it's unlawful for any person to enter therein and use the property without permission. Please identify any pieces of property so posted. Please provide documentation of the specific code, ordinance, and or resolution of the city which designates and describes any public property as having been withdrawn from person. In other words, what give us the public documents which Wallace or the Parks and Rec Department are using as the basis for these new sweeps. Please provide any written or electronic information documenting any discussion leading up to this decision, whether between Parks and Rec officials, the SCPD, city council members, city advisory bodies, or other organizations, public or private, such as the Santa Cruz Neighbors, which was mentioned by caller Madison a few minutes ago. I would prefer this information in electronic form. I'm also looking to see the documents, not to have copies of them. I may ask for copies of some of them. which I determine when I determine which are relevant. Wallace's actions have already upset one disabled woman who lives in her van, as well as a man living with AIDS who are legally parked in that lot, according to their account. For a significant amount number of people in Santa Cruz, their vehicle is their only affordable housing. A significant number of these people are disabled. I'd also like to know if Wallace or the Rangers under him or the SCBD working with him have received any training in dealing with physically or psychologically disabled individuals. If so, specify the nature, extent, and content of their training. Please give me a call. An informal phone briefing with some follow-up documentation may be able to replace this Public Records Act request, as this matter is time-sensitive. I'm making the full request today formally, hoping that through verbal discussion we can limit it at a later point. In other words, I was saying, I don't insist you give me every document you got. Let's talk about these issues. He never called me, or he called me, but he said, I've been away, and you know, but I'm sending you a response. Here's his response. His response, I sent this on August 30th, and a week, actually 9 days later, which is within 1 day of the Public Records Act deadline, 10 days, actually probably has longer, because it's probably 10 working days, although I'm not quite sure about that. He wrote, "Dear Robert, the city budgeted for new signs, asphalt, seal, coat, and new striping for parking lot A. This work is a continuance of the previous work completed in the other parking lots the last few years. This phased work is for the restoration maintenance of the LHF parking lots. The work is planned to be completed this fall. I do not have any written documentation regarding this project." As you know, the public can dispute any citation. John Wallace received extensive training, 40 hours, 3 years ago, that focused on learning to work with people that have psychological disorders. Sincerely, Steve. Now, what I notice about this is the improbability of it, that there was a decision made to change public access to parking lots and no documentation whatsoever about it. I find that, frankly, unlikely. Yet that is what is being said in this email. What do you make of this, Ike? Am I being too paranoid here?
I'm not sure if paranoid is the right word. I don't think you're being too paranoid. Getting back to something you said a little earlier, there is a very common theme of blaming environmental damage on poor people. You know, and that, I've heard that so many times, either internationally, nationally. You know, they say, oh, the reason we have so many, you know, deforestation is due to poor people. Pollution of the watershed is due to poor people.
Forest fires.
Everything's due to poor people because there's, you know,
poo-poo and pee-pee.
You know, let's just take a look at the poo-poo and pee-pee issue. If you walk around on some of the parks, Moore Creek State Park on the west side of Santa Cruz has a cattle leasing arrangement with some of the ranchers on the west side. And you would be amazed to find the number of cow patties that are all along that park, all the way. And then the city of Santa, the university also leases its fields to the cattle ranchers, and if you walk up there, you will find thousands of cow patties. And as soon as the rains come, what happens? That all washes down into the Natural Bridges watershed. So you know that big kind of lagoon down there. You know the reason it's so nasty after the first rains is you're getting these cattle. You know, and that's never a subject of discussion. You know, because the city makes a certain amount of money by leasing those properties, and you know, and if only, you know, the homeless people could pay. You know, then they wouldn't be harassed like this, you know. And what I would say, my suggestion for the homeless people of Santa Cruz is to take up a donation. Everyone can donate, you know, a dollar or two each. Give it to some city council members, and maybe then they will start being your advocates.
Sort of pay as you go, that sort of thing.
Well, you know, I would really say that this is the central problem in our political situation.
It's insufficient,
right now.
You know, liquid persuasion, you know, that sort of thing.
You know, it's you. You, it's this quid pro quo.
Yes, it's, okay.
Or know, bucks for the go.
What you're saying about the whole pee-pee poo-poo issue, the funny thing is there's an irony to it. The Ted Bennies of this world made it possible so that way they want laws over who goes into the forest. So that way they don't grab your daughter or your grandson and rape them or kill them. So they want control over parks. Because whenever it comes to children, that's the number one priority. So they should... This is the reason why people hide in the bushes, because they'll get camping tickets. So if they made it so it was legal and you can just go in the open, there would be a group of people, maybe a cluster in one area, but you wouldn't have to worry about these parks. You wouldn't have to worry about people peeing right by the water because he'd have designated areas, put a porta potty. There's like ways around.
Ridiculous.
Things.
If you did that, everybody would come to Santa Cruz to pee and poo in our toilets.
No, it's like that's the
Haven't you talked
thing
to Mike
too.
Rotkin? That's what he would say.
If they give you permission to play music in front of one store, right? When I was waiting for you at 7-Eleven, I was just sitting out there, oh, I'll play my harmonica for a minute. And within 3 seconds, the guy came out like, if I make it okay for you, everyone's going to ask. I said, you know what? I was actually rebellious. I said, I'm waiting, so call the police. This will be funny to tell the officer when I call you up and you can prove that I was waiting. Is waiting really loitering? Is it really, you know,
No,
waiting?
It's not. It's not loitering, and I'm glad you did that. Although, of course, if you're on private property, their rights expand. Although, it's a good question.
But I would have sat on the sidewalk, and they would have took that as sarcasm and called the police anyway.
If you're on the sidewalk, there's a real difference between being on a public sidewalk. I have to tell you this, between being on a public sidewalk and being on private property. It seems artificial.
How can you shop there?
For example, you have a right to public access to private
public
property.
Access,
but if they tell you to leave, unless you can show they're discriminating on the basis of a class, a recognizable class and a protected class, under the UNRRA Civil Rights Act, which often, often advocates of the poor talk about this law, but they can't really use it. It hasn't been successfully used in the last few years. I think it should be. But the fact of the matter is, for example, the public sidewalk is different. So when you're downtown and you're playing music on the public sidewalk, a merchant can't give you permission to be on the public sidewalk
or deny
you permission. Either way, they can't say, officer, we let him be here or we didn't let him be
in
here.
In another way, though, we do have that. Anything, it doesn't matter. Even if it's as petty as a ticket, the more petty it is, the more better it looks in court when you do go fight it. Like me, the last case I was just in, and I got found guilty by a bunch of people in the jury because my lawyer wasn't even on my side. I didn't know it. She thought, oh, you must be guilty. And I actually admit, I said, yes, I was under the influence of something, and they piss tested me. But I went to the hospital. I had documentation. I went to the hospital because I was feeling queasy. And they said, the doctor didn't even say anything. He probably looked at me the way I looked. Probably said, oh, this guy's on drugs. He didn't tell me that, so I didn't know what it was. And then I didn't open my mouth. But, see, this is
What's
free
your point
radio.
Here, Brian?
You can open your mouth.
Right, but what is your point?
You open your mouth in front of a jury, you can prove to them anything. Like, if I was standing out in front of that 7-Eleven...
Well, apparently you didn't prove it to
them. But if I was standing out in front of that 7-Eleven...
You're not
going
to get a jury trial
and
for
I
that
do have receipts.
Thing. Brian?
No, watch.
Wait a minute, hold it.
All you have to
wait,
do
no,
is
no, you don't get a jury trial for that kind of stuff.
No, but you have to get a judge hearing.
A judge is going to be paying more attention to the police
officer.
But
then if you lose the appeal, you can get a jury.
It's an appeals court. You can appeal.
You can take anything to an appeals
court. You can appeal, but you can only appeal on the basis of a legal error.
Legal error.
Not on the basis of a factual disagreement. So, I mean, these are all... I'm not saying you shouldn't try to do all this.
The legal error would be...
I think it's all important.
Okay, if the judge does not hear me, right, about how is it possible? It takes a jury of 12 people to... How is it possible to walk from a mile and a half distance?
Excuse me, it's an infraction.
Okay.
If he wants... Well,
but
actually,
by law, you have to be there 10 minutes for loitering, right?
There's no loitering law.
But
period.
10 minutes
no,
is what they
there's
say.
There's no loitering law. There is no loitering law. There is no loitering law.
10 minutes is reasonable time to where if
depends
you're
on the,
beyond
it
10 minutes,
on
you
the,
are.
It depends on the discretion of the merchant. The merchant doesn't want you on his property.
At all.
He can say or she can say to you, you're trespassing, I want you to leave. Now, if he's doing so or she's doing so because you're black...
No, but
you can sue his ass off and win.
If
wait
a
minute,
a traveler,
sue his, you can sue
bag.
His ass off and win. But if you're just a traveler, and they create a pretext, they can say you have to leave and without giving a reason, often. Now, in a certain extent, it's a gray area, but the problem is the police department is going to be on the side of the merchant. And the judge is going to be on the side of the
But,
merchant.
See, I'm the kind of person that
That's
I would
the
stand there with a picket sign every day and ruin
Good
their
for
business
you.
For that.
And that works. Let me explain to you. That actually, in Fresno, California, we actually got a call from, actually it wasn't Fresno, it was Kalamazoo, Michigan. We talked to a homeless group in Kalamazoo, Michigan. We talked to a woman there, Lorianne Tennyson, about 3 weeks ago. She was kicked out of McDonald's for no good reason. She was a customer. They just decided they didn't like her. She hadn't bought something that morning, and she was about to use the bathroom first. They kicked her out. She left, and then she came back with 30 people in picket signs, not on the property, but right off the property. And she raised the roof on the issue. Now, that's good if you have an organization behind you, if you have the energy to do it, and if you're willing to do it. Now, the problem is
I got denied,
most people don't.
I got most threatened the other day.
That may
not
be.
To pick it. Not to pick it. Well, because I have to make a 24-hour advanced call to make an appointment to see my baby, right?
There's one.
And I'm trying to get a kiss from her.
Hold it. We got a caller. Let's get the caller in here. Hi, you're on Free Radio. If you're Madison, you're going to be arrested. Go ahead. Hang on.
Artist, which was my
it's you. You're Madison.
Idea
you're under arrest, Madison. Madison,
it's
you're
only taken.
Now, do you have any last words to say before we take you into custody? Go ahead.
Speaking celebration for Madison's rockin' idea at Sal's Tannery. Thank the Sal's very much.
Okay. Rather than make strident announcements, slow down. Start again, say what you want to say, and we'll give you a moment or two to say it.
Groundbreaking celebration for the low-income housing marriage with the arts, which was my concept way back in 97.
Wait a minute. Are you announcing something that's coming up, or are you making a commentary of something that's happened?
Groundbreaking at South, 3 p.m., Sunday, September 16th.
Okay. And that's open, that's open to the public, is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
And
now give us the time and the place again. Give us the time and the place again, could you?
Okay. Groundbreaking at Sal's for Low Income and the Arts. 3 p.m. Sunday the 16th.
Give us the actual location, because a lot of people don't know where Sal's is.
1040 River. And anybody who's been ripped off by Kirby Scudder, bring your Van Kirby signs or whatever you want.
So you're going to be leading a protest of some kind.
Well, you know, everybody's been kind of shoved to the corner, all these nobody artists, because they don't realize how important they are. And if you've got a bitch, then let him have it, Kirby Scudder, because he's burned everybody in town, from intellectual property on down.
Kirby Scudder.
You know, art, he's stolen from everybody. Matt Lee.
Who is Kirby Scudder?
Everybody.
Who is Kirby Scudder?
Scudder's some scumbag from Boston that Emily
Are we talking about a company, an individual?
He's an individual wannabe artist who's put his name all over my work for the last 5 years since he showed
up. What exactly is his position in the city? I mean, is he getting funded? Does he have any power? What's the deal?
A mild partnership, which I think is slowly grinding down because I've had to be such a whiner over my own work, that he's running something called the Santa Cruz Institute of Contemporary Art, which I think might have been given some city money initially, at least a $10,000 grant for a database, but he'd already stolen about that much money from...
And how is he linked? I'm trying to understand. You've announced an opening on the 16th that people can come to at Sal's Tannery at 1040 Pacific or 1040 River Street. Is that right?
Yeah, 1040 River.
And is this just sort of a wine and brie affair? Is this something people you're going to be having a protest yourself at? Why do you suggest people be aware of this, and what's going to happen there?
Speak up, and they know it.
Say
but
again.
Anyways, I'm the founder of the concept here to put the low-income housing in the arts. The South.
Again, I'm trying to understand about this particular event. Why do you want people to attend it? Do you want people to boycott it? What's your position?
I'm in the arts. I mean, I needed this 20 years
ago. We're missing each other. Let's try again later. Okay. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I wonder if anyone else listening? And Madison, I'm not trying to simply diss you. It's just, sometimes it's good to have a little variety on the show. Ike, you have a comment you want to make?
This all has to do with how the city apportions its money, really. I mean, that's really the issue we want to talk about, because let me point out that, most homeless people, you would not guess they're homeless. Some of them are, there's a lot of Latino people who are homeless in the area, and these are the people who provide a lot of the economic basis of a lot of the local small contractors in the area. They're out there in front of San Lorenzo working for $10 an hour, and that does drive wages down, but, there's lots of reasons why so many people are coming over our borders from Mexico that have to do with NAFTA. And so you have to take a look at the whole picture, and you have to realize a lot of people who are homeless don't want to be seen as homeless. They go to quite a bit of effort. They're shaving in the city bus stations, and they're simply trying to get by and eat. Their choice is, they can't rent because rent's too high in this area for the wage, and this city council is pretty much opposed to a living wage initiative. So these kind of problems, and then there are some homeless people who are seriously need help. I mean, they've got addiction problems or they've got mental problems. They need a place to stay and some medical attention. And, that's a better use of the city tax base than giving it away to some global construction firm on some backdoor deal with city council members in the water department. And that kind of thing is, the only solution to that is real transparency, so people can see what's going on and people can say, okay, who are you funding? Who are you not funding? And, you know, we don't want homeless people on the street. And it's not because they don't look good. It's because they're out there suffering. I mean, you're sitting there homeless. And you, the sun goes down. What do? You can't read. You can't, you can barely feed yourself. And so, you know, that's a social network. It's a social contract. Look, you know, we're all in this together, like it or not. You know, rich and poor. We all breathe the same air. You know, we don't all eat the same food. But, you know, that's sort of a social contract. That's like the basis of a society is, you know, how you treat your most unfortunate members. And we're doing a really rotten job of it in this city and in this state, I must say. So let's, you know, reorganize your priorities, people.
Now, here's an interesting, I eloquently put there, Ike. We're listening to, that was Ike Solm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also in the studio is Brian Holtze. Homeless himself, but nonetheless an avid deli chef, among other things. Here's a story by Randy Shaw from the interesting website Beyond Cron, the voice of the rest. So for those of you who get tired of reading the Chronicle and all their bullshit there, you can go to Beyond Cron. It's at www.beyondcron.org, or www.beyondcron.org, cron.org. Media deserves blame for homelessness by Randy Shaw. While the traditional media's role in promoting the Iraq war has become conventional wisdom, military invasions are not the only place where the press sells the public a false story. Consider homelessness. For two decades, the media has offered the public's a framing of homelessness that focuses on problem individual behavior rather than on the massive federal funding cuts that saw widespread visible homelessness reemerge in 1982 after being non-existent for over 40 years. I don't know about that. There was a lot of it in the 30s, but I guess so. That's from 1940 onward. The San Francisco Chronicle still identifies the homeless problem as primarily caused by problem individuals such as campers in Golden Gate Park and blames advocates rather than the media and politicians for the persistence of homelessness. C.W. Nevis's August 28th Chronicle column, and Nevis has been a very large leader in attacking homeless people who camp in Golden Gate Park, and you saw for a whole week in the Chronicle one headline after another, needles in the park. Although without any stats about connecting homeless people to needles or indicating that there was any higher proportion of needles than anywhere else in the city and so forth and so on. Similar, for example, to the way the police departments smeared homeless people here in Santa Cruz at the protest from August 12th to August 18th at City Hall, the homies for the homeless protest, which essentially set up a safe zone for people to sleep in when the city would not provide that, and also put the police under the spotlight, saying, if you're going to give us tickets, do so where we can document it, and then take those tickets to court as evidence that you're violating the Jones decision. For those who don't know, the Jones decision from Los Angeles declared that it's unconstitutional, Eighth Amendment violation, cruel and unusual punishment, to give someone a citation for sleeping when you have no legal place for them to go, and all public property is declared a no-homeless zone at night, which is what Santa Cruz does. Not only all public property, but all private property in terms of your vehicle. You can't be on in a vehicle publicly parked on a street without risking a $95 or now a $97 citation for camping. And what happened with the media did here, interestingly enough, the Sentinel first wrote a positive story about the whole thing, although they didn't mention the Jones decision and the point of the whole protest. They did mention, you know, the sleeping ban. They printed the sleeping ban on the paper, and for the first time ever, we actually saw the wording, sleep after 11 o'clock, it's illegal, which sounds kind of strange since 1,500 to 2,000 people have to sleep after 11 o'clock. The second story, however, which appeared 3 days later, and actually the night after that story appeared, police came and cracked down and threatened to arrest everyone, and people left. They gave out six camping tickets, and the police spokesperson, Zach Friend, who is now in a running battle with Tony Madrigal on the city council, for those of you who follow the Sentinel, because Madrigal dared to suggest that the police are engaged in racial profiling, as he saw it last year at Halloween in Santa Cruz. Yes, our police department. That was his claim. And the police department is, of course, raging and ranting and raving at Tony Madrigal. Madrigal is standing, you know, by his guns to his credit, although he was one of the most weak sisters I ever saw on the police review board and hasn't done shit for the homeless in his years on the city council. I commend him for taking this stand. I've invited him to come on the air, but perhaps because of my caustic tone otherwise, he's not interested in facing what might be a few critical questions along with some supportive behavior. Anyway, the police department spokesperson, Zach Friend, claimed and put in the Sentinel the claim that there was all these kinds of illegal behavior happening, drug use, sex in a dumpster, poo-poo being smeared on the walls, and a couple of other things as well, which slipped my mind. And this was dutifully reported by Jennifer Squires, who wrote the article in the Sentinel, without any kind of documentation. Well, I went in and I asked for the documentation. I asked for every single ticket that was issued that week, and also every single call for service that came in and what those calls for service involved. Well, I did get back a preliminary statement from the police department that they had issued a total of 8 tickets that week at City Hall. Six of them were for camping the last night of the protest. 2 of them were for camping the first night of the protest. And they weren't for camping, actually. They were for sleeping. And Zach Friend said, well, they were camping. And I said, well, did you issue them under Section A, which is the sleeping ban, or Section C, which is the camping ban? And he said, and he had to, you know, I saw the tickets. They were under A. Friend has refused to return any subsequent calls. And when I've asked for more information about this, I am still unable to dislodge from Tricia Hewsom, the records manager of the police department, the specifics about this. Although she has said, if you come in and deposit $35, we'll start printing stuff out. My response was, these are public records. I shouldn't have to put down any money. I'm not asking you to make a single copy for me. I just want to see the records. She says, we won't give you access to police computers. I said, if they're public records, you need to have a public computer available for the public to look at public records on. It's as simple as that. She's refused to do it. I mean, she's as a worker there. She can't set up the computer herself. But she, you know, she takes a sort of unremittingly hostile attitude to the idea that such requests are unheard of and inappropriate. And of course, she has a right to her opinion, but I think they're completely appropriate. I wanted to get this information today, as well as information about the police response to the ACLU brouhaha, which some of you may have been following on the air, which was a situation where Mike Rodkin, a council member and board of directors member, actually engaged, in my mind, in criminal behavior by blocking my entrance into a public meeting, refusing me access to that meeting, and then calling the police because I had a sign with me. The police, as I had mentioned before on the program, did not respond to Rodkin, and they were there. They said, you have to let him in essence, and they allowed me in. But I wanted to know the nature of the complaint that Rodkin made, because if Rodkin made a false police complaint, that is a crime, and he needs to be held to account for it. Maybe this is Mike calling in to give us a full explanation. Hi, you're on the air. Mike Rodkin, perhaps?
No, I was the one.
You are not Mike Rodkin. Your voice
is
much too high. Now, don't rush forward, Madison. Take your time. Take a deep breath. What is it you want to say?
We not.
Slow down.
Unfortunately, to my heartbreak, after the little green fairy, little Mexican green fairy, she was adorable, left my home.
That's a little hard. I don't know if we want to get into little green fairies at this time. If you can sort of take a deep breath and say what you want to talk about, we'll give you another opportunity. Go ahead.
That they were racially profiled. No, they weren't.
I see. So you're opposing the idea of racial profiling. Well, that's another subject. I'm kind of doing it in passing, so I'm going to pass on that one because I only have about 14 minutes left in the show. So what I'm saying here is that I'm reading an article by Randy Shaw of Beyond Cron website, how the media spins the homeless issue really in a negative way, which really is not news to anybody who's been following this show and probably to a lot of people who haven't been. And I've been relating it to how our own Sentinel spins stories and how our own police department holds up on Public Records Act requests when we try to get information about that. I'm still hoping to get this information by Sunday. I got another email from Tricia Hewsom, which gives me some more procedures that I have to go through before I get something that I requested over 2 weeks ago, which is beyond the 10-day Public Records Act limit. So it's kind of, you know, if only I were a big, high-powered attorney with a lot of money and a lot of people working with me, Would they do the same thing? Well, probably. The police department's pretty powerful in this city and in many cities. But in any case, here's more from this article by Randy Shaw. Even prior to the San Francisco Chronicle's focus on Golden Gate Park, I had noticed a disturbing trend in papers across the country. A city's progress on combating homelessness was being evaluated without regard to the Bush administration's refusal to provide the money to solve the problem. I attributed this inaccurate reporting to two factors. First, the traditional media is wary of pointing out Bush shortcomings. Having detailed the president's abandonment of Katrina victims, the media does not feel the need to provide another major analysis of the president ignores the poor frame. Second, the federal government's blame for homelessness is ignored because many reporters covering homeless issues today either know little of the problem's history or are not given the space to include the root causes of the problem in their story. The result is that homeless stories are treated like the crime beat. Just give the who, what, where, and why of what happened that day and forget about the broader context. While I was pondering the media's failure to link homelessness to Bush federal housing policies, Chronicle columnist C.W. Nebius made it all perfectly clear in his August 28th column. In asking homeless advocates what their solution was to homeless people camping in the park, Nebius declared, "The where do you want to put them argument leads down a familiar path of unaccountability, for there is a short... From there, it is a short trip to the theory that our country is trapped in a cycle of homelessness, that the problem is so large and complicated that it will take 8 hours to explain." Before breaking down Nevius's message, note that he spent many years as a sports writer before becoming a columnist focusing on the East Bay. Now that he's covering San Francisco, it is fair to conclude that much of Nevius's own understanding of homelessness comes not from personally examining the problem for years and talking to service providers, but rather from reading the traditional media stories that have done more to confuse rather than to educate the public. In other words, Nevius may be as much a victim of bad journalism, we can say even Jennifer Squires or Shannon McCord of the Sentinel as well, as a member of the general public. Let's begin with Nevius's claim that homeless advocates preach unaccountability. What Nevius means is that some advocates do not want to hold people responsible for camping in the park or for other problem street behavior. I made this same point about advocates' appearance of support for such behavior over a decade ago in the Activist's Handbook. But Nevius confuses the point with the larger issue of unaccountability. Homeless advocates have long sought to hold the federal government accountable for killing public housing funding in the 1970s and then devastating the federal housing budget in 1981, but the media has instead allowed presidents, senators, and congresspeople to pass the buck. The real enabler here is not homeless advocates condoning camping and drug abuse. It is reporters like Nevius who enable the Bush administration, and in this case the Riley administration in Santa Cruz, and its predecessors to get away with not addressing the homeless problem. In fact, I believe that the Chronicle has likely written more positive stories than any paper in the nation about the Bush administration's so-called homeless plan. Every time the Bush homeless czar Phil Mangano rolls into town, Chronicle reporters and editors are there to greet him with positive editorials and media spin. Do they press Mangano on Bush's draconian cuts on the Section 8 program or on the president's opposition to a National Housing Trust Fund, which would have been passed in 2001 under a President Gore? I don't know about that, but maybe. Do they criticize Mangano for being the front man for an administration that allows millions to live without homes while granting tax breaks for billionaires? Of course not. That's what I call unaccountability, and it is the media, not homeless advocates, who are to blame. Paul Bowden, who was quoted throughout Nevius's column, authored a study earlier this year that highlighted the link between federal housing cuts and homelessness. Neither that study nor its conclusions was included in Nevius's piece. What about Nevius's claim that the notion that our nation is trapped in a cycle of homelessness as a theory? Anyway, he goes on to talk about the media and how it's responsible because of its unaccountability for essentially distorting the homeless situation. And I would say this is true not just for the homelessness, but if we want to talk about what's happening with respect to the issues you've raised, Ike, which is to say, I haven't seen any articles on desalination. I've seen articles on desalination by Shannon McCord, or possibly, I'm not sure who wrote the article. That occasionally comes up, but nothing about the background of Camp Dresser and McKay.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I've read Shannon McCord's articles, and I've actually given her some information, and she's incorporated into her stories in a low-level way. And this is, I think, more the editorial control of this. I'm not going to blame the reporters. I think the ownership of the Sentinel is...
I'll blame the reporters, so go ahead.
Well, you know, if the reporters try and tell the truth, they would get fired, I can guarantee you. They are not allowed to tell the truth, even though they know it. You know, their editor will come in and say, sorry, you no longer work here. And if the editor...
Well, you're speculating.
Tom Honig is the guy who controls the Sentinel, right? And the guy who owns the Sentinel now is Dean Singleton, a bigwig. They're based in Colorado. They own like 1,000 newspapers all across the West. They own the... You know, it's an amazing list of papers that Dean Singleton, one guy, controls. And he's
But this was true before Dean Singleton got his fingers in the pie.
It's true. They were owned before that. The Sentinel was owned by Dow Jones, the same people who own the Wall Street Journal.
I know. But yeah. I would like to see the... I don't think that order comes from on high in the Wall Street Journal. I think Shanna McCord doesn't have a clue on these issues. I mean, she's a nice woman. Don't get me wrong. I like her as a person. I talked to her yesterday on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
She was very apologetic, canceling an appointment with me, just like Mayor Riley. Actually, she was better than Mayor Riley. Mayor Riley canceled all the appointments with homeless people twice running, and a third time was a no-show without even letting them know about it. They showed up, and she wasn't there. At least Shanna McCord, well, she didn't call me either, I got to say that. But when I called her, she was apologetic. The difference is you can get a hold of Shanna McCord, you can't get a hold of Mayor Riley.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was the recent bloodletting at the Sentinel where they fired 10 of their reporters, didn't they?
But not Shanna McCord.
Well,
and not Jennifer Squire.
This is how it works. You don't need to follow orders. They fire the people who don't actively jump through the hoops. I mean, that's how it works these days. You don't fire the people who go...
Probably true. Yeah.
It's a different type of system. You know, you're not invited to reapply type of thing. We no longer need your services type of thing. It's not a direct, oh, you did this, so we're firing you. It's you didn't show sufficient eagerness to play the storyline that we want to play, so you're no longer needed. And that's really how it goes these days in corporate America.
A couple of quick things before we reach the end of the show here. People probably seen this in the AP. The AP, mind you, we're not talking lefty press, but Associated Press. Overwhelming numbers of Iraqis say the U.S. troop buildup has worsened security and the prospects for economic and political progress in their country, according to a poll released Monday that provides a strikingly bleak appraisal of the war. 47% want American forces and their coalition allies to leave the country immediately. The survey showed 12 points more than said so in March. As the troop increased, the surge that we hear about was beginning. And 57%, including almost all Sunnis and half of the Shiites, said they consider attacks on coalition forces acceptable, a slight increase over the past half year. The poll was conducted by ABC News, Britain's BBC, and Japan's public broadcaster NHK. 70% in the survey said they believe security has worsened where the added forces were sent. And yet, we are going to see the Democrats cave on this in the next week, although I'm told September 15th is going to be a day of protest in Washington and hopefully here in Santa Cruz. Are you leading the troops here, Ike? And what about you, Brian?
Okay, well, here's what I have to say.
The anti-troops, I should say.
We are having a problem in that neither the Democrats or Republicans will admit that the war was all about oil. You know, they just won't admit it. And now let me play for you that clip I talked about. And this is a clip from the movie Syriana, and I think it's very illuminating. Let me make sure I've got this all queued up here.
We have about 3 minutes. Actually, we're going to have to... We'll give you 35 seconds of this clip. Go ahead. This is a movie with George Clooney, which apparently is not properly queued up. But maybe next time we'll be able to play it. You know, I mean, here we go.
And these American lawyers, tell me, what are they thinking? What are they thinking? They're thinking that it's running out. It's running out. And 90% of what's left is in the Middle East. Just look at the progression. Versailles, Suez, 1973, Gulf War I, Gulf War II. This is a fight to the death. So what are they thinking? Great. They're thinking, keep playing, keep buying yourself new toys, keep spending $50,000 a night on your hotel room, but don't invest in your infrastructure, don't build a real economy, so that when you finally wake up, they will have sucked you dry, and you will have squandered the greatest natural resource in history.
That's what nobody wants to talk about.
Well, the question is, how can we talk about it locally? And I guess the best way is to keep raising the issues you do, Ike, and keep taking the stands, the principled stands you do, Brian, when the police tell you to move on and to assert your right to be where you need to be. This has been Bathrop Spears Broadsides. We happen twice a week. I'll be back again on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning. Please join me if you'd like. I'll be there. If you want to catch me between times, you got things to report, 423-4833, the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is the number to call. And you can also come to the Human Rights Organization meeting, which meets every Saturday, 2 o'clock, at the Firefly Cafe, which is at 131 Front Street. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Please stay tuned now for a little tuneful time from the cream to the dregs with that cream of the dregs, Uncle Dennis.
Until your body rots. Is the way things were back in 1968, that being Steppenwolf off their album Steppenwolf, that one called The Ostrich Song. I'm Uncle Dennis. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. We're going to take a tour through the music of the 60s and 70s tonight, as we do every week here on Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also available on the web, streaming live at www.freakradio.org. And it's going to be my pleasure to be here in the studio with you for the next 3 hours. Of course, at 9 o'clock, we'll have the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And, of course, at 10 o'clock, we'll spend the next hour exploring one group that came to fame in the 60s or the 70s. So stay tuned for all that. Right now, let's listen to some Doors.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today. Love me two times, girl. I'm gone away. Love me two times, girl. One for tomorrow, one just for today. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Love me one time, do not speak. Love me one time, yeah, my knees got weak. Love me two times, girl. Love me all through the week. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Love me two times, I'm gone away. Not speak.
find me one fine day. Yeah, my knees got weak. Love me two times, girl. Last week, all through the week. Love me two times. So